from Boulder, Colorado. Welcome to the GCN show.
Welcome to the GCN show.
Coming up this week, why cycling is categorically the most brutal sport in the world, something we were reminded of last week with the crashes and horrific weather conditions, Paris-Nice and Torino, but why we keep coming back for more.
Plus, the 80 kilometer per hour world record that the UCI disqualified, the man who averaged 268 watts for 24 hours, the best bike path we've ever seen, and the incredible sight of Peter Sagan dressed up as Ken with a painted on six pack. This week in the world of cycling, we learnt that Great Britain's Matthew Richardson averaged almost 80 kilometres per hour, or 50 miles per hour, in the 200 metre flying time trial at the Track Nations Cup last week.
His time of 9.041 seconds only stood briefly, though, before the UCI intervened.
Boom.
Oh, yeah, apparently he briefly dipped inside the blue line, which made the record null and void.
Although strangely, he kept his first place qualifying position for the next round with that very same ride.
We also learned this week that Peter Sagan has let himself go since he retired from cycling. The makeup team had to airbrush a six-pack onto him for his most recent appearance on Slovakia's equivalent of Strictly Come Dancing last week.
To be fair to him, he doesn't look like he's exactly piled the pounds on since retirement,
no.
Does he? And finally, we learned, or at least we were reminded, that cycling is the most brutal sport in the world. Last week, the rides at Paris-Nice and Tirreno-Adriatico faced some horrific weather, including sleet, hail and freezing temperatures.
Plus, we witnessed the unfortunately inevitable crashes that are part and parcel of bike racing and, to a degree, bike riding.
So Jonas Vingegaard crashed off-camera on stage 5 of Paris-Nice. Matthias Schilmoser hit a traffic island and then the deck 2 days after that. And Paul Magnier crashed twice on the same stage of Tirreno.
And there are plenty of others too. Now, you don't have to be a pro rider or even compete at any level to experience the pain of road rash or broken bones through cycling, or how tough it can be in inclement weather.
No, it's something that pretty much everyone who's ever ridden a bike will have experienced at some point, unfortunately. My first ever experience of really bad weather came when I was 13 years of age. Connor. So I decided to get up really early one day at the weekend and ride the 5 miles to my local town of Christchurch and back to buy a cycling magazine that I couldn't get in my local village. I had gloves on, but they weren't up to much, I've got to be honest. And as it was in the middle of winter, I got home without any feeling left in my fingers. And I was in such a bad way that I didn't make it to football training later that morning.
Did you used to play football?
Yeah, right wing, mate, for the mighty Bramsgore FC. I looked a bit like Peter Crouch on the field, but without any of his skill, hence my transition to cycling.
Well, there you go. My earliest memory of anything like that was actually the Junior Kern Brussels Kern in 2010.
Crikey. It's a slightly different experience than my jaunt to the newsagents.
Equally horrific, though. I mean, I think in the men's pro race, which was on at the same time, only about 20 riders finished.
I remember it. Bobby Traxel won, didn't he?
That's it.
Like you said, hardly anybody finished the race.
That edition, and the rain just poured down. I think most of the junior race that I was in, we all kind of rode on our own, like in ones and twos, but I didn't know where I was. It was one of my first experiences of like a bigger race on the continent. Absolutely frozen. I was in shorts and jersey.
Oh, that's horrific, so isn't it?
I was just riding to get back to the hot shower.
Well, if we're talking race days, as opposed to going to the newsagents and back, one that sticks in my head is from the Vuelta Ciclista a Lyon, the amateur version, back in 2003. Don't remember exactly what stage it was, but it started snowing as we went up quite a large climb. And I was already so cold on that climb that I decided to stop at the side of the road, wait for my team car, much to the annoyance of my DS, because I was actually in the first group at the time that I did it, and put all the clothes that I had in my rain bag on. But on the following descent, I was so relieved that I'd stopped and done that because I rode past people who were literally wailing with the pain of being so cold. And actually, 10 people ended up in hospital with hypothermia at that stage.
Crikey. If only you had the extreme weather protocol back then, eh?
Well, you joke, but every time I see that protocol implemented in the modern peloton, and I'm disappointed not to see the race that I've been looking forward to watching on TV, I do remind myself of days like that and how brutal this sport can be in those conditions. What would you say are the worst conditions that you've ridden in since you retired?
Actually, probably the ride I did with Ollie back in January this year.
Oh, this year?
Yeah, Wales can be pretty tough going, especially in the middle of winter. But it's next level when a storm comes in, it's raining.
And it was a bad day that day, was it?
I was worried. I was worried for a moment. Yeah, it was very bad.
Yeah. Weather-wise?
Yeah, we had freezing rain up in the mountains. We had to do a big descent in it. And I was wearing everything I had, but still, it's that mountain rain just freezes you to the core. And then once it gets in, it's so hard to warm up.
Well, it is, yeah. The only way is a bath, I find.
Yeah.
A really hot bath. Oh. Did I hear that it was that evening when you were at the pub that you ordered two main meals for yourself?
Yeah, yeah, that might have been that. Yeah. Yeah. And a few sides as well.
And a few sides.
I did eat them all, though. I did.
Justifying his purchases. Yeah. Okay, on to worst injuries.
I was pretty lucky, actually, on that front. I fractured my elbow. That's the only bone I've ever broken. Right. I did have a knee injury. That was pretty bad. That kept me out for longer, about a couple of months. So it was really frustrating.
Okay. And you've obviously had the obligatory road rash, I assume.
Plenty of road rash, yeah. Lots of road rash, lots of painful showers.
And it's... You sort of wonder what other sport you could think of where it's kind of par for the course, where you rip a load of skin off with road rash, isn't it?
That's a good point, actually. MotoGP, something like that?
Maybe, but at least they've got leathers, whatever the modern equivalent is of leathers. We've literally got a piece of lycra separating our skin from the tarmac if we hit the deck and the crash.
Yeah, it's best not to think about it too much, if I'm honest. What were your worst crashes, actually?
I broke a few more bones than you. So I broke my pelvis and one collarbone in 2004 in a training crash. And I broke my other collarbone in 2011 at Il Lombardia in Italy. And then I also broke my ankle in an epic cyclocross crash in 2023.
Oh, is that when you were riding around a field with Si?
Yeah, that's the one, Connor. But like you, I've had my fair share of road rash as well through the years. I guess the one that stands out from that point of view is 2011 Tour of Qatar. So I crashed on the opening stage and then again on the same side a couple of days later, and both of those were at around 60 kilometres per hour.
Oh, that's always my worst fear, same side. But it's not just the crashes and the weather that make cycling the most brutal sport in the world, it's the physical exertion too. Cycling can push you over your limits. There's no hunger knock like a cycling hunger knock.
At least not that we've experienced, anyway. No. When it happens to you once, you just think, this is not something that I ever want to experience in my life again, do you? You never want to repeat it.
Except that you do. Yeah. You do it again. And then there's cramp. That's not nice either. Saddle sores and neck pain from being in a position that the human body isn't supposed to be in. The list goes on and on. And it begs the question, why do so many of us keep going back for more?
It is a very good question, and I think one that most of us have asked ourselves. But I think the answer is probably in what we've already said. What's that old saying? Something along the lines of nothing worthwhile ever comes easy. And that rings true of cycling because it's so hard that the accomplishments and the milestones that you achieve feel all the sweeter for it.
It must be that. Mm. It must be that, mustn't it? The feeling of satisfaction you get from completing a hard ride or from doing your first century or winning a race, it does make all the pain and suffering worthwhile.
Type 2 fun, isn't it?
Yeah, I love
cycling. Cycling is like the definition of type 2 fun. And it's that feeling of euphoria you get when you achieve your goals that I think keeps people coming back time and time again.
Only up to a certain point for you, Dan.
Well, that is true, Connor. I take your point, but I am coming back, obviously, for more this year. When I get to the end of that 350-kilometre ride in June, I'm going to feel a huge sense of accomplishment and achievement. If the weather isn't great that day, that sense of satisfaction will undoubtedly be even greater. I mean, obviously, I'm hoping it's sunny and 25 degrees. But you know what I mean?
Right, over to your home. What keeps you coming back for more? And what was your biggest accomplishment on a bike? Let us know in the comments below.
And also, let us know if that feeling of accomplishment was because it was so hard, that particular ride. I'm looking forward to seeing these responses because I bet there are all sorts of hurdles that you lot have overcome to reach your cycling goals. So make sure you get involved.
And now it's time for Cycling Shorts.
Cycling Shorts now, starting with the incredible images of Peter Sagan dressed up as Ken from Barbie, taking on Slovakia's version of Strictly Come Dancing. For those of you not familiar with the format, it's a TV dance competition. Celebrities pair up with professional dancers and they vie to win the show after a number of weeks.
Sagan pulling off Ken very well, in my opinion. If you know what I mean with that sentence. I did have a look twice, though, at those painted-on abs. And I also love how Vincenzo Nibali, his former teammate, is trolling him in the comments. What a sport it is that we're in. Now, it turns out he's dancing well anyway, as the former world champion survived through to the next round, next week.
Fair play. Peter, one place, though, I do know that he'd have loved to ride a bike is Bentonville. It's known as a bit of a cycling mecca over in the USA, but check out these bike paths that have been built. You have the choice of a paved trail, a mountain trail, or a pump track with rocky ramps for big air, if that's your thing. Imagine how many kids would be encouraged to cycle to school if that was their route.
Well, just the sheer fact that you've got a choice of bike paths down the same route
is such a good idea.
Brilliant. Sticking with cycling over in the USA now and Mid-South Gravel, what is beginning to be seen as a season opener in the US Gravel calendar took place over the weekend, or at least it should have done. Unfortunately, the race had to be cancelled at the very last minute due to wildfires, which were further exacerbated by high winds.
Yeah, I followed events unfold on social media as a number of riders due to take part posted updates of the situation. It looked like a very scary experience for all involved, with many evacuating the area and scrambling to kind of find a safe refuge away from the fire risk. Really sad to see that the race got cancelled for organisers and all participants. Dozens of homes were actually destroyed in the fires too. It's a real tragedy for the local community. Ted King and Chase Walk did actually manage to set off on their bikes though, once it was safe to do so, to raise funds for the relief efforts. They attempted an FKT on the long version of the route. Walk actually ended up with the best time, completing the 300 miles, just under 17 hours. Really hope that this event recovers for next year, because it does look like a cracker.
I'm with you on that one. And all our best to everyone that's been affected by those wildfires. Talking bike locks next, and this is an idea straight out of April Fool's. In all honesty, I actually had to check the date when I first saw this. The Cactus bike lock is going to retail for around €260 when it launches later on this summer. One of the key pieces of tech you get for the money to deter theft? A smell so potent, the device's creator claims it will put off any thief. Bold claim.
Yeah, so basically, if you cut into this lock by 1 centimetre, a foul smell is released. It's supposed to be so unbearable, it's impossible to stay near it. So the smell comes from a gas called putrescine, which is thought to be the same gas emitted from a decomposing corpse.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's an interesting idea, isn't it? I guess anything to deter thieves. Not sure how much someone with an angle grinder and a face mask would notice the smell. I'm sure they would.
You definitely wouldn't want to lose your keys though, would you? Imagine having your bike locked up at work. You're like cutting through
it. Someone come and help me, please.
Whoa! Let off a stink bomb. Anyway, speaking of decomposing corpses, I'm not sure if this is a good segue or not, but one way to feel like one is to try and break the world record for the longest distance in 24 hours ridden on Zwift.
I did wonder where you were going with that. We're not sure if this is an official record or not. In fact, we decided it wasn't in the end, I think. But either way, Canadian Brennan King set out to try and break it. 1,008 kilometres was the benchmark, and his strategy to break it was to average 300 watts for the entire 24 hours.
That's a tough going. That is tough going. I can't help but think back to what we were talking about at the start of the show at this point. Obviously, you don't have bad weather when you're indoors, but the pain of that.
And to make matters even worse, he said on his Strava page that he cracked after 5 hours, averaging 300 watts. And so he lowered the power to 280 watts.
And then?
And then he held 280 watts for a further 11 hours, after which he cracked big time. He said the last 7 to 8 hours were very tough.
I mean, I'm not surprised. He's 87.5 kilos, but still that is an incredible performance, even though it didn't quite net him the world record he'd hoped for.
This seems like a nice segue, actually, into promoting our Zwift Games coverage. Much shorter races, much less than 24 hours, but very, very intense. So the three-weekend series culminates in the Epic Championships, and we'll have that live this Saturday from 1700 GMT over on our GCN Racing YouTube channel.
We can also announce the winners of the Zwift competition, where there was a chance of winning either a signed Alpecin De Koning or Canyon Trams Under Crypto jersey.
Right. You ready?
Yep.
The winners are Jun Montes, who wins the Alps Indurain jersey, and Al Lorenzo Natak, who's going to receive the Canyon SRAM Zonda Crypto one.
Well done, both. And just while we're doing some promos, you may have noticed that we're wearing a couple of new T-shirts, both of which are available at shop.globalcyclingnetwork.com. I need to turn around, actually. Give you a full picture of mine.
There we go. Very nice, mate. Well, you could stay like that for the rest of the show if you want.
What about the audience?
It's a lovely graphic on the back there, Connor. Yeah, stay like that. Next up, hack /bodge of the week. Would you like me to pass your laptop, or would you like to turn around?
It's a bit weird.
I'm going to start with this one that came in from Andrew Borowicz. I recently purchased a gravel bike, but wasn't keen on spending an additional $1,300 on new power pedals and gravel shoes. I've always preferred the feel and power transfer of road cleats anyway, so I decided to stick with them. However, when I used my road shoes on gravel, they were quite slippy and it damaged the carbon fibre soles. Since I live in the mountains in Utah, I had some ice cleats lying around. I combined several pairs and cobbled together a gravel overshoe. Now my road shoes are protected, I have great traction and avoid the extra expensive gear that I don't like. Sorry, I was not able to incorporate any zip ties. Well, do not apologise, Andrew. I'm already saying this is a hack. I've never seen anything like that in my life. That's fantastic.
That is a hack.
I mean, I think for most people, there's no need for it because for many, they're quite happy to use mountain bike cleats and mountain bike shoes. But if you, like Andrew, prefer your road shoes and road cleats, that's genius, isn't it? Although, even though you've got the extra grip, road cleats wear out very quickly, don't they? If you use them in mud and gravel a lot.
Yeah, that's the only downside to this. And also, if you're walking around getting mud in your cleats or your pedals, it can get...
Yeah, we had that, Connor, didn't we, on our recent ride? Did you use road pedals and cleats?
I did. Luckily, I had a river crossing at the bottom to wash my shoes.
I can't believe you, of all people, knowing your own route planning skills... decided to start that ride with road cleats and pedals.
That was actually me trying to save space in my bags. I had two pairs of shoes. It backfired massively.
Oh dear. Anyway, it's a hack from me, Andrew.
That's a hack. That's a good idea.
And that as well. Fantastic.
Yeah. Next up, we have JSN1970 spare stem and a bit of joinery. Creates an adjustable up, down, left, right tablet and phone stand for turbo training apps and watching your favourite cycling show. Woohoo. This is a dedicated training bike, so no need to remove for each ride outside. Love that.
That's pretty amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
It takes a while to figure out what's going on. But yeah, just basically a second stem attached to the side of the normal stem on the handlebars there. And then the hole, which normally has the steerage tube going through it, he's got a piece of wood, which then has a mount on top of it, where he's placed his iPad. And there's also space for the phone on the side. I'm describing it for podcast listeners. I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, amazing. Even space for the charging cables. A little small detail, the charging cables drill holes.
Yes.
It goes out the back, nice and neat.
Very good.
Yeah, that's a hack.
Has it been a good start to Hack and Bodge this week? Well, JSN 1970. Tony M, see how we go on with this one. The front derailleur on my old indoor bike was rusty and sticky and required a kick of encouragement to move, which eventually resulted in the clamp breaking off, requiring me to remove it completely. I decided I should man up and only use the big ring anyway. Crikey. So fashioned this chain catcher out of polystyrene gaffer tape to the seat tube as the chain occasionally dropped off. It worked flawlessly for 3 or 4 years before I eventually replaced the bike altogether. Oh, fatal error, Tony. He's put hack himself at the end.
I don't know what my opinion on this is.
Well, look at the state of it, kind of.
The thing is, it's worked for 3 or 4 years. So
it's a piece of polystyrene.
What an indoor trainer, though. He's avoided having to buy a front derailleur again.
Well, I guess.
But yeah, we can't say piece of polystyrene is a hack.
No, it seems to be
but it's worked.
Breaking some kind of unwritten rule to say some stuck on polystyrene is a hack, surely.
I mean, it's a classic bodge. You haven't even smoothed the polystyrene off on the top. That drives me nuts.
I'm in such two minds here. Again, to describe this to podcast viewers or listeners, all I need to say is it looks horrific. It's literally just a piece of white polystyrene that's been sort of broken off some packaging, placed around the seat tube, and is sort of nudged up against the chain to prevent it dropping off. I'm going to have to go bodge, I'm sorry.
I think we have to go bodge. Yeah, I'm going to have to go bodge as well. Okay. I'm sorry, but I mean, fair play.
Sorry, Tony.
Right, moving on, last one. Just got nuts.
Just go nuts.
Just go nuts. Sorry, yeah. Misread that one. Oh dear. So saw someone submit their attempt at an indoor trainer conversion, but they didn't fully commit. I've got the giggles now. So here's mine. Stripped an old bike down to bare essentials, committed it to single speed, using Zwift Play controllers, ditched the big ring, looked silly otherwise, and gave it a fresh paint job. No brakes, just pure turbo power. Figured you might appreciate a proper dedicated Zwift build. Oh, nice.
I'm just checking for polystyrene very quickly before I pass judgment. Just got nuts.
Just going nuts.
Yeah, hack.
Yeah, that's
cool. Do you
know
what? The Zwift coil, it almost looks like a chain keeper, which was a big thing in hacks and bodges on the GCN show for many years. You don't seem to send them in so much anymore. But I'm definitely going hack for that one. That looks good to me.
Yeah, I've got the full balance board and everything on there as well. The wobble
board. There's quite a lot going on. There's quite a few hacks in that one single photo there. So well done to Just Go Nuts and to everyone else. Thank you for submitting your hacks and bodges this week. Don't forget, you can get involved in this part of the show. All you need to do is go to globalcyclingnetwork.com/uploader and you'll be able to upload your pictures or videos of your own hacks or bodges or any you've seen out and about.
I've still not, just gone nuts. Okay.
Well, we'll give Connor 10 minutes to recover and we'll be back with you soon.
Caption competition now, and it is your chance to win the coveted GCN Camelback water bottle. All you have to do is submit hopefully witty caption to a photo of our choosing and we pick the winner.
We do indeed. We've got a fantastic winner this week. First up, the photo from last week's GCN show was this one of Tim Malia of Soudal Quickstep, resplendent in the leader's yellow jersey at Paris-Nice, looking rather fondly at the cuddly toy, which is a lion, presented by Le Credit Lyonnais in France. Our winner this week is Mr. Scott Chegg, who put, good job that wasn't Jasper Philipsen. We all know he really struggles to hold a lion.
That's good. It is really good, that.
It's very good.
Poor Jasper Philipsen. He gets a lot of stick
for not keeping to his line in sprints, isn't he?
Yeah. Mm. Fair play, Scott. Get in touch and we will get you a water bottle to you. And this week, Dan, what's the photo?
This week's photo is this one of Paul Magnier, fellow Soudal Quickstep rider, lying on the floor on the last stage of Tirreno Adriatico with his specialised bike basically perched on top of him. I will get you started. When I said I wanted to try a different position, this isn't what I had in mind.
There you go. If you think you can do better, get involved in the comment section down below. It's an incredible photo. It just goes...
There's a series of photos. Yeah, he just went a bit hot into a corner. His team car actually didn't help because it sort of threw him offline a little bit. But he then crashed later on in the sprint as well.
This photo is a perfect example of that same, where it's like it's either you or the bike when you crash. Like either you hurt yourself or the bike. Like it's on the bike, it's had a nice soft landing there, on him, hasn't it?
Well, this is what we always say. You know, whenever you crashed in a pro race, if you landed on somebody else, it's much softer, wouldn't it?
Imagine me landing on you.
Well, you'd have been a good person to land on.
Yeah, I'd have been a good person to land on, but you wouldn't want me landing on you. Right.
Oh yeah, don't forget to get involved with your captions then in the comment section below and we will pick a winner next week who will get themselves one of these. We will shortly let you know what's coming up on GCN over the next 7 days. But first up, some brilliant comments that you guys left underneath last week's videos. We're going to start with a couple from underneath last week's show, which is about pro cyclists that still make the same mistake about focusing on power instead of speed. End censorship 874, but joke's on you, I've got low power and speed. Checkmate. Whilst Tim Dunham wrote in and says Sean Kelly famously, after an underwhelming VO2 max test, pointed out the machine doesn't measure suffering. Which relates to the start of this show, I guess, doesn't it?
Yeah, true point. And in our ride together in Spain, you rode the Orbea's new e-gravel bike, which was a lot of fun, actually. Enjoyed riding that with you, mate.
I really enjoyed that bike, that ride, shall I say, and the bike, I mean, as we said in the video, I didn't actually use the E part that much, but there were a couple of points where it was very useful because the going got very steep on your route, didn't we? Particularly after the river crossing, in fact, where it was, like I said on the video, I don't think many people could have got up that without an e-bike, even pros.
I don't think I'd have got up that.
Because it was wet and incredibly steep, wasn't it?
Yeah. It shows you
were fine in your grippy road shoes, weren't you, walking up it?
Yeah, it was a big old slog.
Anyway.
Slopping along up the climb. That jiu-jitsu guy wrote in, Lloydie and Connor were a fun pair. We don't get to see together too often.
No, thank you very much. Yeah, we're back together again.
Yeah, we need to do another ride together.
Good company coffee, but Connor's mapping never ceases to amaze me. You and me both, good company coffee.
Ron Byers, 9912. I'm 76, I have an e-bike. It allows me to keep up my younger friends on group rides. That is something I was no longer able to do on my road bike. As a friend told me before I got mine, I can still ride as far as always, but I just can't keep up without my e-bike. For me, that is the big reason for an e-bike.
Yeah, we had quite a lot of comments along these lines, actually. A few people disappointed, I think, to see me on an e-bike. Obviously, I don't really need one, but Orbea were launching this new e-bike, and I said I'd absolutely love to give it a go. And they are so much fun. You know, when I'm older, if I want to get on a bike, I will probably get one to keep up with the group that I might have been riding in. But also, like we just said, there are certain pieces of terrain. This probably applies maybe more to mountain bike riding than gravel riding that you're supposed to be doing. There are certain pieces of terrain you just wouldn't get over on an old bike. So it allows you to explore quite a lot more, I would say, as well. Meanwhile, Maxwell Starr, along similar lines, says, an e-bike may have saved my life. I've been heavy my entire adult life and picked up cycling 6 years ago to lose weight. Last spring, a knee injury and a lung infection from COVID that kept me off the bike and my weight skyrocketed. Getting back on the bike was going to be daunting and I wasn't sure if I'd ride again. But then I picked up a Sousa Confluence gravel e-bike and it turned everything around. I put in 150 kilometres on it before winter hit in Canada, but it was the boost I needed to then put 1,200 kilometres on Zwift over the winter. That, plus eating better, I've gone from 145 kilos to 120 in 5 months, increased my FTP by 30 watts, and I'm the fittest I've been in over a decade. He goes on to say some people look at it as cheating, but those with fitness issues, they're absolute game changers, e-bikes. And yeah, they're not for everybody, not everyone needs one, but for a lot of people, they all make the difference between being able to continue riding and enjoying cycling as importantly. And they do help you to get fit if you're in a situation like Maxwell Starr is, or was.
Yeah, definitely, well said. Under Van der Poel's coach explains how you should be training. This is an interview I did with Christophe de Kergel, who's part of Alpecin de Koenig's coaching team. He actually heads up their coaching team and very, very prominent in the organisation of the team too. So Ben Smith, 2609, wrote in, Christophe is doing so much good work advertising Alpecin shampoo. His hair is pristine. Very true. Roe Brig, 8045, fascinating interview. Christophe's point of view and training strategy is different from a lot of the other pro coaches. It was awesome to learn from him. Chapeau Conor and team for putting this one together, A plus content. Thank you very much.
Yeah, it was. I've not got all the way through the interview yet. I watched the first 20 minutes when it came out on Friday. Must watch the last part of that at some point this week. Underneath, can I break the speed limit on my bike? Andrew McAllister said, as soon as he saw the title, he just knew that it had to be Hank video. Correct. Under, we tried the toughest world tour training session. How did it go? Peter Dobos wrote in to say, I'm breathing out of my backside, is a quote from Alex. And says, Alex really commits to full gas.
Lightning LL2991, I could see it on Si's face how pissed he was even before he said it. Ollie needs to sleep with one eye open for a
while. He does.
Oh, that was brutal, that trade session.
Thankfully for Ollie, Si is away this week. But yeah, watch out Ollie next week. Right, coming up on the channel this week, on Wednesday, driving sucks, why I will always commute by bike. This is your video.
It is, yeah. I'm always going to try and ride wherever I'm going as much as possible, not just for fitness, but just for transport, mm-hmm. and just getting places. And it's why I really enjoy doing that. It's tough at times, but yeah, in this video I'll explain a few of my own reasons why.
Great stuff. So that's out tomorrow if you're watching this the day that the show comes out. On Friday, 15 years after racing the Tour de France, has my bike fit changed? This was actually supposed to come out a week or so ago. We had to rejig things around in the schedule slightly. But yeah, this is me going to ID Match to see how much different my bike fit looks now that I'm in my mid-40s, probably less flexible, certainly less powerful, for a ride that I want to be comfortable on, first and foremost. That comes out on Friday. Then on Saturday, we've got those Zwift games live on GCN Racing from 1700 GMT. And then Connor's back again on Sunday with a video that's going to be something along the lines of Godfathers of FTP.
Yeah, so I'm basically speaking to Andy Coogan and Hunter Allen. So kind of they were like the godfathers of FTP. They invented FTP, a very well-known, it's not just well-known, it's almost like it's a term that you just know. It's a household term. And I'm really interested to get their take on it as the founders of it and just see what they think of it and where it's gone since.
Yeah.
I'm actually talking to them tomorrow. So.
I'll be really interested to watch that video because I was saying to you before we started recording the show that I frequented forums back in the early 2000s where Andy Colgan, Dr. Andy Colgan, was prolific in sort of helping to explain what he was doing and in showing people what he'd been working on, which included FTP, but not just that, training stress score, acute training load, chronic training load, training stress balance. They all came from Dr. Andy Colgan. And many of those things, to a degree, are still used at the very highest level to this day, I believe, incorporating the cycling peaks initially, which then became training peaks. So I will be tuning in on Sunday, certainly for that one. Right, then that brings us to the end of this week's GCN show. Good to be back with you again.
Yeah, you too.
Twice in a week.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Three times in a week, actually, because we've also got a Milan-San Remo preview show coming out for you tomorrow. So stay tuned for that as well, because it's not just a men's preview this year, there's also a women's race as well.
Thanks for watching, everyone. See you next week.